Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Backlot. We are the Backlot Boys. This is episode 4, and we are riding ourselves right out of Paradise Pier and into the original Disneyland. I am so glad to be back at Disneyland for our podcast, where we're going to be talking about stories and little-known facts about our favorite park. Are you excited as I am, Boy Guna, for Disneyland time?
I am. I'm happy to be leaving the pier and heading across the way over here to the where it all started. So I'm excited to talk about. I know that you've got some good stories. You got some more kind of extensive stories. Mine are a little cheap, a little carnival style. I think people think they're I don't know. Maybe they'll find them interesting. And I know that you've got some story about Nixon or something. So I don't want to give anything away. But yeah, happy to be over in Disneyland. You know, when we started the whole thing, I thought, you know, hey, we're going to be talking about Disneyland all the time. Our first three podcasts were all wrapped up over there in the pier and in California Adventure. So yeah, excited, happy to be in the kingdom today.
Yeah, one more episode in Paradise Pier. We'd have to call ourselves the Pier Boys or something like that. But
I'm not trying to do that.
Out of there, and we are now moving into Disneyland, like I said. But before we do that, we got to stop at the Kingdom Cable because there's been some fire, some dragons, and some crazy stuff going on at Disney World that we have to attend to.
Yeah, you know, like us, being West Coast guys, and we're Disneyland Resort by nature, as we've been there a million and a half times. But you know, we've also been in Disney World. We had good times over there. Some people got their little water sprites, those little speed boats out in the Seven Seas Lagoon. Got those stuck in the reeds one time. I think probably wrapped around the propeller. It's been a while since we've been to Disney World. And, when news breaks on Disney World, typically I might gloss over it, kind of see what's going on. If it's a new attraction, that's a big deal. But, you know, if a food stand opens, a food stand closes, there's a new parking garage, that's not really a big deal to me. But this was. And I don't know exactly how I first heard the news. I think it was either through Google Alerts, just, you know, because I've got all that stuff popped up on there. Or it was just straight up through Instagram. I almost want to say it was through Instagram. And I'm popping on there. I'm just, you know, cruising through the feed or whatever. And boom, there's this dragon on there, completely engulfed in flames. And now we all know Maleficent, right? She's good. Well, she's not good. But if you saw the movie, the Angelina Jolie one, she seems like she's good, just misunderstood. Well, she was very misunderstood last Friday. Last Friday afternoon, part of the Festival of Fantasy, which is a parade that takes place in the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World, Friday afternoon, about 15 minutes to go in the parade. So, Scar, they were almost done. They were just about done. Yeah, a few minutes left. And Maleficent has turned into her beastly self. She's turned into the dragon. And she's coming down the way. And if some of you guys have seen photos, obviously, I'm sure you've seen stuff in the news about the one that's, you know, she's on fire and all this other stuff. It's a really, really cool parade float, if not probably the best one they've ever made. I did a little research afterwards. I'm looking at the comments on lots of different websites, both when the news broke on this, but more so when the parade first started back in, back in 2014. And so I'm looking at all that press and all the public's response when they saw this. Most people thought it was the best parade float they've ever seen in their lives. Like, it's the dragon, you know, right? But it's like steampunk themed. We were just talking about steampunk last week.
We were.
And so that's kind of the design. That was kind of the design of this dragon. So super cool, kind of industrial, really, really, really funky looking. And it was designed by, you know, Michael Curry, who does a lot of, he's a Tony Award winning guy. He does a lot of stuff, on Broadway for set design and things like that. He also did Tapestry of Nations over there in Epcot. And I think he did the Finding Nemo musical at Animal Kingdom. I think he worked on both of those. So anyway, he's very good at this stuff. Yeah, really. Yeah, you know, we're proud of him. We're happy he's there. So he, along with a Disney guy, I'm trying to think, Richard Imprada. I can't remember exactly who it was. I'm probably not even pronouncing that right. This guy, these two got together. They built this parade, this parade float, and it was like nothing anybody had ever seen before. And all it's supposed to do, spout little bits of fire. But what it did instead was some of the hoses apparently broke or leaked or something, fuel and oil squirting all over the place, and the head, you know, completely engulfed in flames. The horns are falling off. If you see this photo at the end of everything said and done, so not just the one where there's like steam coming off afterwards, which is a great shot somebody got, but if afterwards, and there's a cast member standing below her, below the dragon, and Her head's kind of drooped low. The horns are gone. It's the weirdest looking thing to see that head. Completely horns, completely clear, burnt off. In one of the videos, you watch it fall off, and it's just like, oh my God, you can't even believe what you're seeing. And so, yeah, I call, you know, after the storm, you're looking at this dragon. It just looks like a sad snake. It's kind of a bad deal. But, you know, hopefully they can revive it. You know, I'm not sure. It's tough to say. It's probably a total loss just because of the structure of the thing. But yeah, last Friday afternoon, this thing catches fire in the middle of this parade. There's 15 minutes left. They're in, for those of you guys who know the park, they're in the Liberty Square area. It's kind of like our proximity wise. Maybe it's a little bit like our New Orleans. Is it like our New Orleans Square?
Well, it does have the Haunted Mansion in it. Both of them share that
true
thing.
True.
Now, I didn't know this till recently. Maybe I just had to remember, but it's very interesting with Disney World is that the parades go along Main Street, and then they do go through Liberty Square, and then up and into Frontierland, which is just crazy to think about in Disneyland, where in our park, it goes, of course, up Main Street, and then it takes a right-hand turn next to the Matterhorn, the castle, and then along that parade corridor, and then back by Small World, and then off into storage. So it's just kind of fun to think that their parades actually go off into Frontierland, which is just strange. You just don't picture parades in Frontierland.
Yeah, the theming doesn't make sense, but I guess, you know, their layout's different. I don't know what they're trying to do over there, but so they wind up in Liberty Square, and there's a store over there. I'm trying to think of the name of the store. I think it's called like Ye Olde Christmas Supply or something. I thought it was classic, but I think it's like Ye Olde Christmas Supply. If you see in one of the videos, the fire is just expelling from the dragon. You know, his mouth and his head and his ears and everywhere, and it looks like it is so close to the awning, of this store. Like within, I don't know. Maybe the proximity is different from what I'm seeing. It looked like it was only a few feet away from just a total disaster. So that didn't happen. You know, the fire department was called, but a park cast member, the responders get there, the fire's out. I think there's usually somebody inside the structure. There's usually somebody inside the dragon. There has to be a live person in there for this one.
That's not good.
Disney World rep, I believe, said everybody, you know, there's no injuries reported or anything, of course. And now here's the funny thing. They said that the area was closed off and cleared, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about this the other day.
Yeah.
But in terms of crowd control, Disney World seems a little bit more like lackadaisical about this stuff. You know, they just don't seem like they are as concerned.
That's what I noticed.
The image, public image, and public health, public safety. Because if by blocked off you mean the ropes down the street path, the parade route, of course those ropes are still up.
Yeah.
But people are on those sidewalks. These people, these guests, are within feet of what's happening right now, and cast members are standing by.
Yeah, now, it was strange. They had all the cast members on the sides, and they were just kind of standing there. Like, I would have thought they wanted to push, the second you saw fire, like, push people off into both directions and then build, like, a wall of cast members.
Like, their hands were in their pockets.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, maybe they were reaching for a stick of gum. I don't know what was going on. But it just, it seemed very odd that they weren't creating a larger perimeter around what was going on. I mean, this is a 26-foot tall dragon. He's just, 30, 40, 50 feet, you know, long. You would think you get people away from that guy. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know if more of that fuel is going to squirt out. The fire comes out. You know, you see it in the movies where it makes that long line of fire. Maybe that doesn't really happen. You know, I didn't see it on Mythbusters or anything, but maybe that's not a real thing. But it just, it kind of blew my mind that everybody was so quick to talk about the cast members, you know, taking control of the situation. Now, of course, we're watching this all on video, and we are, you know, and maybe we're reading some accounts, but we weren't there, so we don't know. But it just didn't look like anybody was responding very quickly, except for this cast member who, you know, basically looked like Prince Philip fighting Maleficent. He's down there with a fire extinguisher. He's spraying it everywhere, having a good time. And this is his moment, you know. He's finally on stage. He's always been hanging out in the back and kind of cleaning stuff up. Never thought this day would come. It did, and I hope he's getting the due credit, so we can rejoice in knowing that he got his moment there. But he's really the only one that's doing anything aside from the dragon, which is bobbing their head. Apparently, the head was stuck in the second position, which you watch the video. Yeah. It looks like, I mean, you know, all the stuff is pre-programmed into the route. There's those little sensors down on the street. You know, so that the parade floats know what to do when they hit certain sections and the music is timed and all this stuff. They, you know, the dragon was still going. The music is playing in the background. It's really eerie. And one of the things that I found out was I actually, it's funny, when this first happened, I reached out to somebody on Instagram who had a great video of it. And I just said, hey, listen, this video is crazy. Would you mind if I reposted it? You know, if that's an issue, then of course I won't do it. And she's like, oh yeah, you know, posting all over the place. Okay, that's great. And then I, hey, can I ask you a few questions? So I kind of dove in and I just went for it. And she's talking about what the scene was, and I'll keep this short. Now I'm going crazy here with this, but, basically what she said was they're watching the parade coming down the route, and there she's right there where this is about to happen. She's under one of those umbrellas. And here comes the parade, and she sees the, you know, the other participants or the other actors in the parade. They kind of keep looking back at the dragon, the, you know, the people that are right in front. And she's like, oh, you know, hey, maybe that's part of the show. You know, like they're nervous because there's this dragon behind them shooting out little bits of fire every once in a while. But pretty soon that quickly becomes obvious that they're looking back because they're realizing there's a major malfunction and they don't want to catch on fire themselves. And maybe they split off to the sides, as some reports have said. But she just said, you know, it was a little bit crazy there for a second. They got some good footy. And then the area was cleared within an hour or so, maybe less than that, maybe a little more than that. All the smoke is gone. It's as if nothing ever happened. There's no oil on the ground anymore. I guess there was oil everywhere. I didn't see that, but apparently there's some oil all over the place. But you know, I feel bad for the dragon. There's no way that thing's cheap. Feel bad, especially you guys. And you know, maybe go to the YouTube channel and we'll do a small video on there with some media there you could take a look at. Take a look at this thing. It's very sad without the horns. I don't even know what to say about that. A little crocodile tear on that one. But yeah, it sounds like everybody's okay. This was in my opinion, a very major malfunction, a pretty big issue. You know, I think because a lot of us that don't go to Walt Disney World are probably hearing about this dragon itself, this, you know, this mechanical, you know, wonder for the first time. But it's been there since 2014. Paris actually has one too. I think Paris is the only other park that has one of these. And I got to imagine that they grabbed that one and got it. You know, they've got people giving it a once, you know, twice over, making sure that this issue doesn't occur over there.
When did this parade debut?
2014, I think September, like right after Labor Day weekend or right before.
All right. So it's been going a while, and you know,
oh yeah, three years,
probably around every single day, maybe twice a day. And the thing just performs well, but you know, once in a while, some things just happen that you don't really anticipate for. That's a shame. I remember when they hit that thing with the big extinguisher, there was smoke everywhere. People were running. Me personally, I would have been on the ground. I couldn't have breathed in that. That would have been super scary.
it would have been. I mean, you got to imagine, it's pretty crazy. I guess the one guy was saying, you know, the real tragedy here is like, yeah, there's some technology that has been sacrificed now. And maybe at one point somebody might have been in a little bit of danger, but a lot of the cell phone video, I'm telling you, it's people are shooting that thing horizontally. That's the real tragedy. And so we're still looking at these kind of crappy videos. The other thing is, the only other thing that I really wanted to say about this was the float, it was designed by the creative entertainment side of Imagineering.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that was separate, or I didn't know that was an arm. I think what it is, I did think it was separate. And I thought that creative entertainment was actually different from Imagineering, that these were two separate things. And that like the theatrical, like live entertainment side, was not just a side of Imagineering or a facet or, you know, a division of Imagineering. I thought it was a totally, totally separate deal. So, learned a little bit about how they do the show production and stuff like that. And it's really a whole big thing, as you could imagine. But yeah, it sounds like everybody's doing okay. There's lots of stuff. You can just Google it if you want, but if you get a chance, check out our YouTube video. We'll throw it on the same channel that a lot of these podcasts show up on, and there'll be some video. And some of that video is that, like I said, I chatted with this person to make sure that we had the rights and, you know, the deal to pop that up. And then we'll throw in some photos as well and maybe some facts, but yeah, if you hadn't heard, here you go, check it out. The videos are, they're intense. They're quite alarming.
All right. So that dragon's a loss, which is a shame. It was a very beautiful dragon with the fire and kind of stylized in detail. So it was nice. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. The question I have is, will they rebuild it to the same way that it was before with the fire shooting out and all that stuff? Or are they going to kind of rebuild it and just kind of forget the fire portion of it, which would be a shame. I always liked the fire at Disneyland. As a young kid going through Adventureland, seeing the tiki torches and stuff like that, I always liked that portion of the park to see the fire.
I don't want to go off track here too much, but do you remember when you first saw World of Color and you're standing out there? I know I also don't want to go back to California Adventure. Turns out we kind of like that place. We're there and we're in the viewing area, and that portion of the thing, I think it's when like there's like some pirate stuff going on. I can't remember. Maybe it's Emperor Zurg. But when those things go poof, and like the fire shoots off everywhere and you get warm, like instantly, you can feel that heat. And that's, I think that's great. I love that. I think that's so cool.
It always feels good. It's getting a little cold at that time of day in the desert.
Yeah, warm up for a quick second, a little space heater.
Well, there we go. So that is the Kingdom Cable for today. And like we said before, make sure you guys let us know things that you're enjoying about the podcast. Put it down in the comments of the YouTube channel if you're watching this on YouTube. And thank you guys so much for the comments and the ratings so far. Like, ratings, and comments are always much appreciated. But it's time now to start talking about the history and stories of our favorite place in the world, and that is Disneyland. And so we got some good stuff. I'm going to talk a little bit about the time Richard Nixon got kidnapped. That's right. He got kidnapped. Alligators, real alligators in the park, and maybe a first death or two in the park. There's some strange stories behind that. What do you got?
You know, I got a couple different things. I want to talk to you, you know, I want to kind of bring up some of the smells that you smell around the park and why that is. And some intentional and some unintentional. We're going to talk cats. We're going to talk cats, the feline, little feline situation they've got over there. We're going to talk wait times. We're going to talk swans. And we are going to talk about a brick wall.
A brick wall.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to tell you.
I don't know why it came to my mind is Diagon Alley at Disney or at Universal, but we're talking about Disneyland. Okay. I'm looking forward to the brick wall now. I'm looking forward to this.
I think you'll like what you hear.
All right. So can I start off with Richard Nixon? I'm pretty excited about this.
I've been excited to hear this all day.
All right. So the time is 1958 and they are opening the Matterhorn, the Submarine Lagoon, and the monorail. So that is quite an attraction list to open up. So, I mean, just think of it today. Like if all three like e-ticket style attractions opened at once. I don't know if they actually considered the monorail an e-ticket, but I considered it an e-ticket, especially at that time. Like there was nothing else in the world like that. And Walt, you know, Walt, classic Walt, wanted to bring down his buddy, Richard Nixon, who was the vice president at the time, correct? I think so. 1958. Yeah. So he brings him down. Walt and him have a friendly relationship, a bit of a rivalry, if you will, with their, you know, one guy is the vice president. Walt's over here. He's like, hey, I got the 8th largest fleet of submarines in the world. Now what? You know, that type of business. And so Walt brings him down. They get up onto the platform. You know, he's got his wife and the kids. You know, they're standing there, photo ops and everything. And there was a gentleman in the passenger, not the passenger, but the pilot seat, by the name of Bob Gurr. Now, Bob Gurr.
Big Gurr.
I love Bob Gurr. He reminds me of my grandpa. Like, absolutely. He's just kind of a go-getter, super motivated, super inspirational, ready to just go create something out of nothing. And the monorail was only assembled like a week ago, and they were breaking down all the time, and the monorail had only made one successful lap of the track before Walt brings up Richard Nixon with the press, the Secret Service, the whole deal. And Walt, you know, kind of an optimist, just ready to get stuff done, says, here, Dick, let's get in. And then he brings the family in, you know, the whole thing, and they get inside. And he looks up at Gurr and he said, hit it. And Bob's just like, okay. He pushes the button, doors close, and they take off. Now, inside Bob Gurr's mind, he's like, what happens if this catches on fire or this breaks down over the submarine lagoon? Like, am I going to kill the vice president and my boss? So they go across, and apparently back on the platform, the Secret Service had no idea that Richard Nixon was just going to take off with Walt. And, you know, they're off, and the Secret Service is like, is he kidnapped? Like, what do we do? And they come back around, and they come back into the station. You know, Bob Gurr's sitting there just with his fingers crossed, being like, please make it to the station. And they arrive, and the Secret Service are running alongside them, you know, trying to get in there, like banging on the window, trying to get in there to, you know, make sure that Walt hadn't really kidnapped Richard Nixon. And Walt gets there and he's like, hit it again, Bob. And they go off again. The Secret Service is running after him again on the station platform, and they go back again. So at one time, there was a kidnapping of the vice president by Bob Gurr and Walt Disney back in 1958 when the monorail, Matterhorn, and the submarine Lagoon were all being dedicated. And man, it's just when you think about like those times and how things were like a little bit more casual, you know, things, you know, Walt, you know, this is his thing. This is his park. This is all of his little contraptions and stuff like that. And there's this ownership to it in a way. Like, you know, you don't get that too much from the company because it's all just kind of individuals there for their career or whatnot. But to think of like Walt, how proud he was of the monorails, like these are mine, like look down below, these are my submarines. And he's so excited to, you know, have people get on them and show them off. And it's just something you don't see too much these days. But I like that story quite a bit.
Yeah, that's, you know, I like that one too. And I also thought it was funny that, you know, when Walt, and it wasn't like out of a matter of disrespect or anything like this, but the vice president is there and Walt's like, hey, Dick Nixon, come on over here. You know, not, you know, Vice President Nixon or, you know, Mr. Not even a Mr. He didn't even grace it with like a Mr. Nixon. It's just, hey, Dick Nixon, you know, like. And he shortened the vice president's name, for him, you know, yeah. And it just, I thought that was pretty funny. And Gurr, you know, like, he kind of went for it and they just kept it going. Walt thought it was funny. Nixon thought it was funny that all these guys were left on the platform, not knowing what in the world was going on. Now you can't imagine if that were to happen these days.
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, there'd be assault rifles pointed at everybody and, you know, be kind of a mess. But that was that's great. I'm glad that you brought that up. And I only knew a little bit about it, so that was that's pretty cool. Didn't something else to that? Wasn't there one time when Walt got mad at Gurr because Gurr didn't know that much about trains initially, but he did and he didn't. But Walt, I think Gurr was like backing up or something, and Walt like got all upset because anytime a train is backing up, you have to signal it, you have to call it out, then there has to be some kind of sound or something like that. And I don't know if that was had to do with the, I don't think that was the steam. That might have been one of the engines, or it was one of these. But anyway, I think it was a few times that Walt kind of threw down at Gurr. But yeah, I mean, you guys know Bob Gurr. I mean, guy born back in the 30s or whatever. But he's one of the, I think he's worked with almost all of the ride vehicles on kind of the major, at least the early attractions. Didn't he do most of them?
Oh, for sure. One correction is I think those attractions opened in 1959. I'm thinking like when they started construction was 58. I always get those two mixed up, but I think they did open in 59. But yeah,
okay.
Bob Gurr, we could have an entire podcast about this gentleman. I mean, the omnibus, he made the fire truck, he made any of the Main Street vehicles that move around.
Yeah.
The Autopia was kind of his like one of his.
He started with Autopia. He was doing that. That's how he started his career with him, I think.
Yeah. And then, of course, and then he graduated to making the monorail, the people mover. Like the list just goes on with this guy. Plus the Omni Mover system.
The submarine voyage, which was a big thing, obviously. You know, he did that. He did the Haunted Mansion. Yeah, he did the Dune Buggies. He did the Matterhorn bobsleds.
Yeah.
He has a legend. He's an actual Disney legend, but he's a legend.
Yeah, in both cases. One fun story with him about the Omni Mover system is when they were developing Journey into the Center of, almost said the Earth, Journey into the Atom. I always goof up that name. It's kind of long. You know, the ride, it was in Tomorrowland. You shrunk down to the size of an atom. You were following along the melting of a snowflake. He was in the office with John Hench, Imagineer, great Imagineer.
Oh, Hench, great artist.
Important. And he was sitting there and he pulls out an apple from a bowl and he was kind of twirling in his hands and he was like, why don't we just do something like this? You know, you have this stem, which is like kind of like a support structure. And then the apple is the ride vehicle and it just kind of spins around however they choose you to see. And it just kind of moves around like that on a stem. And so you want to see you know, this show scene, then you want to see him something else. And then this is a continuous vehicle so that people are constantly boarding and exiting the attraction. So there isn't like a vehicle comes in, people get on, and then it leaves the station. So it's this continuous effect. It's pretty cool.
So I never knew how the Omnimover, you know, what the thought process was leading up to it. Walt is always the spokesperson when this stuff finally gets released, of course. Like I guess a lot of times, especially going into this and learning more about Gurr over the last, you know, couple of weeks, couple of months, couple of years, is that Walt, I'm not saying Walt took credit, but he'd be the one that would, you know, unveil this to the public. But he didn't build all this stuff. I mean, so much stuff came from, I always joke about Gurr, but like, you know, in a loving way, the guy has done so much. He created so much of what people are enjoying now, even different iterations of it now. He also, I mean, did you know he worked with some animatronic stuff for a competitive site, Universal Studios Hollywood. He did the King Kong Encounter. He worked on that animatronic.
Yeah. He worked, he had his own company. It was like
Gurr's Guys, I think. Just a couple of guys. And no, it wasn't Gurr's Guys.
He did have a separate company that did make animatronics and things for plays. So he made the Jaws for the Jaws movie. He made the shark. He made the dinosaur, the animatronic dinosaurs for the Jurassic movies, like the Jurassic Park, the original. 100%. Yeah.
Gurr's information. Awesome. I love Jurassic Park. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, Gurr's awesome.
I think he gave himself the title Director of Special Vehicle Development. I think that's what he called himself over at Imagineering. But look at it, he's doing all this other stuff. He's got Gurr's Guys and these other companies. I think that's we'll do more. We'll do more on Robert Henry Gurr, because he really is he's quite a legend over there, quite a staple.
Yeah, I would definitely like to do a podcast on him. So
don't they still consult with him? They still consult with Gurr on things, or he gets involved or not anymore?
I don't know. I don't know if he does. He did leak the fact that Disney World is getting new monorails from Bombardier, or it's not Bombardier, it's like Bombardier or something like that. It's got that little extra flair on the end.
Just say Bombardier. I know that's not right. I just, whatever's easiest for me.
I like Bombardier. It just sounds cooler, but it's Bombardier or something. You know, you've seen pictures.
Sure.
So they are apparently working on making new monorails for Disney World. So yeah, well, let's have a podcast dedicated to Bob Gurr.
How are those going to be different? What are they doing with the monorails over there?
They haven't officially announced it, but good old Gurr leaked it, which we appreciate him for.
How did he leak it? That guy's not on like social media and all that stuff, is he?
No, he was at some kind of a presentation, some kind of event, and somebody asked him a question, and he just replied. Okay. You know, he's just straight up with them.
Oh, that's how he is. He doesn't mess around.
Mm-mm, no messing around.
He's not going to make something up.
All right. I don't know if you want to do the brick wall yet, but I'm thinking
I'm going to save that a little bit. I'm going to do that halfway or so.
Okay, but I'm thinking about it. What do you got for me then to serve me until
let's
then?
Let's see. So I'll just, you know, I'll I'm going to lob one up. This is an easy one. Everybody knows you're walking around the park and there's lots of different things to smell. Mine's less of a story. This is just a little thing. Lots of funny things to smell. Every different area of the park you're in kind of has like a different, it's got like a scent genre, if you will. Right. So, each area is going to be specific. So, you know, you're in Frontierland, you're going to smell kind of some wood. You'll smell a little dust. Some cowboy smells. I don't know if you're smelling, if it's poop you're smelling or, you know, what it is, but you're going to have like these frontier smells. You're over by the Haunted Mansion. I don't know what they say that you're supposed to smell over there. It's going to be more like, it's funny. That's actually kind of the same, but like topsoil. So not dust and dirt, but like topsoil, because, you know, some freshly dug graves or whatever that happens to be. Maybe also some little musty smells.
By you.
And then, yeah, like kind of a little swampy, like over by Indiana Jones, a little bit of swampy element, and other sounds and all this other stuff to go along with it. But I think it's called the Smellitzer, and it's these little things that pump out these smells throughout the park. Oh, there's a vanilla one that's on Main Street. Maybe that's probably the most inviting to some. To me, it is that swampy smell over in Adventureland. That's my spot. But I think that's kind of cool how they do this. They pump out these different smells, and it's just supposed to enhance your experience in that area. You know, if you just show me a log ride, but I'm not smelling anything that's waterlogged, I'm not smelling like damp wood, so that I'm imagining that I'm in the South and, you know, flying around on these logs through the briars, like, then where am I? I'm not going to say anything negative about Knott's Berry Farm, but I'm at a place like that. So I think that's pretty cool. You know, so you've got like these livestocky smells in Frontierland. You've got, I don't know what those Fantasyland smells would be, probably just like churros, but yeah, it's pretty cool how they have, how they kind of have all that stuff split up. So if you ever wonder, you're out there and you're like, man, I feel so immersed right now. I know people don't say that, probably don't say that they feel immersed, but they are. You're like, hey, this is a cool environment. Well, they're doing lots of different things to make sure that you feel that way, from sounds that are being projected through speakers, through the foliage, non-native, but native to what they're trying to impose right there. And then all the way through the smell, because I think, and now correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the strongest trigger to a memory, scientists are still saying that has to do with smell. So you smelled something when something happened. The next time you smell that, boom, you're right back there. Whereas with a sound or a sight, there's so many things that can mix those up or get those confused. The smell, like your nose doesn't mess around. It knows. It remembers. The nose knows, as they say.
Hmm. I never noticed that too much with a smell. Sometimes with chlorine, I will remember that instantly as maybe Pirates of the Caribbean, stuff like that.
Big time, big time.
But when it comes to sounds, I'm way more like adapt to hearing the sound than like instantly triggering memories. But with smells,
you're a sound guy, huh?
Rarely smells will do that to me.
Really?
But when it comes to smells in the park, that's one of the great like subconscious things that make you feel like you're in a place, but you're not like so much aware of the fact. Like you smell sure. this or you smell that, that is accustomed to whatever the theme is of the area. But those are the things that are supposed to be kind of subconscious to make you just kind of feel comfortable in the area or feel something in the area that you're not like really aware of. It's not like in your face. And I like that stuff. I think too much today we're like feeding stuff down in somebody like, hey, look, we're doing this. Look. Sometimes it's I like the subtle stuff. I think that's a art that's being lost a little bit. But I love the smells. My favorite smell is, of course, the vanilla smell at the Emporium. As a kid, mm-hmm. I loved that. We had mm-hmm. a vanilla candle. Well, now I'm going back to saying that a smell reminds me of things, but I'd always yeah. smell that because it reminded me of Disneyland. But yeah.
And it doesn't, would you say it makes you hungry? Of course, you know, nice. It's nice, but mm-hmm. but you can't, you know, people would say like, hey, it's illegal to pump out these smells, you know, into certain areas to entice people to come in the store. But I mean, hey, you're at Disneyland, can do anything they want, but In some ways, yeah, of course it makes you a little bit hungry, but it also just makes you happy, I feel like, right? You know, I feel like it just puts you in a good mood.
Vanilla always makes me happy. Also does remind me of the candy store. They did pump out a little bit of cinnamon back in the day when they had the Blue Ribbon Bakery in that area, which would have been adjacent to the candy shop. That's since been renovated back to the Coronation Cafe. Rightfully so, I'll have you say. But yeah, it's I remember that smell. I'm trying to think of any other smells. Do you know, this is a question I have, do they actually artificially sure. make that smell in Indiana Jones, that musty,
well, the
cavey smell?
Indy one, I don't know. I know that pirates do. Mm-hmm. I know that they've got, they actually, you know, the smell is generated from old wet wood and mm-hmm. sea salt, I believe. So there's not the water that you're in, you know, that the flume that the boats are going through, that's not salt water per se. It's not to say that there isn't like some kind of bromine in there or something like that for, you know, cleaning purposes, but it's not specifically salt, but you will notice a slight, now it's so small, but a slight salty smell. And mm-hmm. then you've got that wood smell. Now I resonate with that one, but what you're saying with Indy, and you're going through that queue where you're just walking under that part in the temple where it opens back up and you can see the leaves above you. Yeah. That's, to me, that seems like when that smell hits hard, and it hits like kind of late, not even late morning. I mean, 9:30, 10. And it's coming in pretty hard. And I think it comes in pretty hard in the afternoon too, if I remember right. But that might just be chemtrails or something, but it, you know, you're right. I don't know if that one's pumped in. There's no, I can't find a statement on that one anywhere. And that was really the one that I was looking for. I was like, what is that specifically? Because I think I've smelled something similar to that, you know, in real life, somewhere out in the real world. And I was like, whoa, you know, but I can't remember. Yeah, I couldn't tell you when that was or where I was. It was just this. All I know is I smelled it. I remembered Indy. I'm always remembering Indy, but I remembered Indy and I wished I'd been on the ride.
Could be some kind of tree or foliage over that section because you can't see the sun. Like you can't see the sky above.
No, that's why photos always, they never quite come out great in the Jungle Cruise area and back there. I mean, you can get one here and there, but it is very tough to get like a good lighting shot. You know, lighting's everything. Everything looks great, cool back there. So it's, you can pull off the picture, but have you ever noticed that the lighting is just never quite right back there? I can't get a solid picture back. You probably can't.
It's a white balance issue. The white balance is being thrown because of all the green. So it's overcompensating, making everything a purplish hue. So that's something to keep in mind, is your white balance is being thrown off by all the green.
It makes me feel like I'm taking a picture indoors or something. Does that make sense? Like I need like a fluorescent filter. I don't know what I need, but it's
It needs to be warmed. The scene needs to be warmed. The camera is going to overcompensate in the wrong direction. Another issue would be that it's very dark. So you are going to need a longer shutter speed in that area because it's pretty dark. Like it's always overcast, you know, lighting conditions back there. So that's something to keep in mind.
What are you saying? Keep the shutter open, turn the ISO up or turn it down?
You would want to probably put the ISO up a little bit depending on your camera and your capabilities for ISO and like enhancement, because the more you bring that up, the more grain will be in the picture. I feel like that's a good podcast in the future, is photography tips for rides. But Yeah, you might want to do that, but just keep in mind, yes, your white balance is going to be thrown off. Set that to shady or something like that, or in post, maybe, you know, bring in a little yellow, and that'll kind of sort that out. But yeah, it is a difficult place to take pictures, but the issue is your white balance is being thrown.
Okay, well, problem solved. Turns out I'm a terrible photographer. So that's the thing on smells. What else do you got, Cosby? You got something else out there besides old Tricky Dick, old Dick Nixon?
Yes, so we're back in Adventureland, right? And this was something that I heard long ago as a young Scar, and I never thought it was true. And what that was that Disneyland had real alligators in the Jungle Cruise. And you might be thinking I'm crazy, and I thought I was for many years. But I was finally was confirmed that there really was a small pen of baby alligators near the entrance of the Jungle Cruise. Now, when we say the entrance to the Jungle Cruise today, it's very different from what it was back in the day because they've completely rebuilt that three times. In its most current form, I think maybe 1995-ish is where we're at today. But there was a pen, and this was near the dock. And it was kind of roped off with just like fishing nets. So it wasn't really much. These are little alligators. And that was what Walt wanted. He wanted some kind of a real creature for the Jungle Cruise because originally he wanted live animals. But live animals wouldn't always be there for the show because Walt wanted a consistent show for each one of his guests. That when they go through there, each one of them gets a good experience. But with real animals, you know, some of them might be hiding in the bush, you know, and one might be taking...
going to the bathroom. Nobody, you know, people may want to see that. But yeah, and especially on a hot day, Disneyland's hot. You know, a lot of times animals are, they're laying low in the heat.
Yeah. So they went with animatronics, but Walt wanted something real. So they went to, I think there was like some kind of alligator farm. Maybe it was near Los Angeles. I think people could go and see alligators back in the day. That place must have been atrocious. And
holy cow.
And so they got little baby alligators from there. They put them in a little pen, but they were always getting out, swimming around in the Jungle Cruise. Could you imagine seeing these little baby alligators swimming around through?
How big is a baby alligator? I'm just trying to try. I mean, you've seen pictures, but like how big are these things?
Oh man, I you know, personally, I've really seen one too close, but maybe like 2-3 inches. About 2-3 feet. Maybe.
That's a small one. Okay. No, no,
not a small one, but you know, like 2-3 feet, I would say.
Yeah, 2-3 feet. Okay.
Yeah, and these things may be smaller, but I think that's about the length. And they were swimming around. They're always trying to catch them, bringing them back. But eventually, they were just too much work and the liability. So eventually, they took them out. But it's a fun fact that I heard about a long time ago. I thought it was fake, and then I reheard it again recently, and it was confirmed that there really was at one time alligators in the Jungle Cruise that were live, not animatronic, just little fellas. They got out a lot, so they'd eventually had to get rid of them. But for a short time, there really were real alligators. I think that's pretty cool.
You're pulling out stuff I've never even heard before. This is, of course, this is something somebody would expect at Disney World in Florida, the swamps over there.
Yeah, of course.
But not at Disneyland. That's quite a bit. That's a little much. It's a little much.
I think I read that originally. I'm trying to remember the book, but I always wanted to get it confirmed because for some reason I never believed it. I think I thought they were real size alligators, but eventually I found out they were just little baby fellows.
What years was this? Do you remember specifically when they were trying to pull that stunt?
I would have to assume it was within the first 1 to 2 years, but no, I don't know specifically when they were in there. No, I do not know, but I do know this is real. It's been confirmed now. At least two sources I had to find. One of them is in the, Secrets and Stories of Disneyland, Jin Corcus, really good guy. I read it in his book and then one other book, and I'm like, okay, this really did happen for reals.
Those guys aren't going to goof around with it.
No, but I had to make sure. I want to make sure these facts are correct, so I always confirm with at least two sources, so... Yeah. Now, what do you have? Are we getting close to the brick wall?
Ah, man, you're really interested in this brick wall, huh?
Okay. you can hold off for now. It's fine. I'm okay. I'll just be here.
It's fine. You know, let's see. I guess I got one for you. I'm still not going to go to the brick wall yet. Some of you guys have been to, you've seen this at Disneyland. You've seen it at California Adventure. What I'm talking about is you've seen cats. Not the play where the guys are kind of dressed up in sort of a weird way and they're always putting their paws near people's faces. Not that one. You've seen these cats walking around, and typically it's in the morning. It's rarely going to be in the afternoon. I actually saw one at California Adventure in the afternoon over by the grapes. Where's mm-hmm. those? Where are those grapes? Kind of by Cars Land, by Radiator Springs.
Yeah.
By the Blue Sky Cellar, you know, where they release some of the concept stuff.
Yep.
On one of those posts, you know, that these grapevines are all attached to, there's this orange cat, and maybe I'll see if I can share this in on the YouTube channel or something. But there's the cat, and he's posted up on a post, and just kind of looking around. Looks like an owl, but it's a cat, and it's an orange one. He's all big, fluffy. But so what they're doing is, why are there all these cats over the park? Well, you have a lot of people at the park. And people are consuming a lot of snacks and a lot of food. Sometimes they bring their own stuff in. That stuff usually smells really weird. But you have people eating food. You have people eating food and making a mess. And then you've got the rodents. Rodents are coming in. They're coming in from all places. Basically, they're talking about mice, rats, you know, things like that. So, and I don't know if these figures are correct. And I don't know if anybody could really confirm this, but maybe someone could. 200 plus cats are in little cat houses. Now, I don't know what they're talking about with cat houses. I would love to see the cat houses, but there's apparently 200 plus cats housed around the park during the day. They're put in there. You don't see them. And I mean, you see a couple here and there, a couple of stragglers, you know, some rebels to the thing, but they're kept in these cat houses around the park at night. When the park closes, they release the hounds, you know, not hounds, but cats. They release the cats, and they, the cats help control that rodent population. And this is not a rumor or anything like that. This is a real thing. The only thing that I guess I'm not quite sure about is the number of cats. Are they really in cat houses, or do they just hang out? I mean, I have to imagine they must be in cat houses.
Yeah, Disney does have houses.
That's a different thing. But you know, the nice thing about it is, what does this do? You know, there's no traps around the park. Nobody's seeing these traps and getting, you know, grossed out, weirded out. Kids aren't hurting themselves with it. Adults aren't hurting themselves with it. And it doesn't, it's, they're clean, it's safe. You know, I think it's one of the coolest things that they do over there. I remember the very first time I saw a cat in the park, it was over by Indiana Jones. It was in the morning. The line wasn't long. You know, we were running the ride, probably going a few times in a row.
Yep.
And we're going across that. It's not a real bridge, but it feels like a bridge. Before you go into the temple on your right, and down on your left is where you would see kind of the overflow queue. And you look down there, and a couple of cats just posted up, kind of, you know, stalking around, looking for a couple last little bites before they head to bed.
Yeah. So, you know, one time Walt actually had all those cats rounded up, and, but they couldn't get them all apparently, because, you know, he got them all rounded up, he got them spayed, sent them off to new homes and whatnot back in the day. But they stuck around, and eventually they liked having the cats around because they kept the rodents all down, because, you know, there's a lot of garbage, okay, lots of people around.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, Disney does spay and neuter them, and they feed them, like, and give them shots and stuff like that.
You know what? Interesting. Well, they shouldn't be feeding, you know, that's what they're supposed to eat, the mice. But mm-hmm. I guess sometimes there's not enough mice to go around for everybody, 200 cats. And maybe some of them are a little slower. There's a survival of the fittest kind of thing going on. You know, we don't know all the details. It'd be nice to find out.
One's got a bad paw. You never know.
Oh, you know, you get stung by a bee, so you can't do anything. He's got that one giant paw, one regular paw. Apnuer, you know, that happened to Ding Ding, remember? You know?
Yeah.
Big old giant paw and one small paw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, you know, so no traps, no mess. It's clean and safe. Everybody's happy. That's great with the cats. I think that one is another one that's not, it's not really that less, it's not a lesser known fact. It's maybe lesser known to people that only go every once in a while or whatnot. But I did think it was interesting about the quantity, and that's why I wanted to run it by you and run it by the listeners here, because, you know, is it possible that there are 200 cats, and where are they? You know, I always imagine that they're on Tom Sawyer on that backside where it's kind of closed, and they have a lot of the phantasmic little floats and boats and stuff like that are kind of hanging out back there. I just imagine all the cats are, that's where they're lounging, you know, just laying on a rock or in the shade, half and half, you know, and tails in the sun and the rest of the body. I don't know what they do like with that, stay warm and cool at the same time. But where are they? Where are those cats?
I don't know. The places I've seen them is the dock for the canoes. I've seen them a lot by the Jungle Cruise. When you come out of Jungle Cruise, one of my favorite parts of the park is where you walk along the walkway and the Jungle Cruise goes by on your right-hand side, and on your left is the queue for Indiana Jones and stuff. That spot, I've seen them a few times in those bushes. You know, it's bushy over there, so they can kind of hide in the day. But if you go to the park early, and you have a pretty good chance of seeing them, especially on the west side of the park.
Yeah, you know, I don't feel like I've ever seen one in Tomorrowland.
I don't think so either. Too hot, too concrete-y.
Oh, yeah. Too much cement over there for those guys. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what else do you got? Something non-cat related, maybe.
The first death. We can get real dark now.
Ooh. All right. Bring it on.
So this was the first death in Disneyland. And this isn't the first death that was company faulted for. This was a guest acting up, if you will. So there was a kid, 1964. There was a party. And he was there. He was, kind of acting up, if you will. He kind of had a bad day going. A girl turned him down and things like that. And so later, you know, he met up with some guys and they were going to go on the Matterhorn, right? Mm-hmm. So he gets on there, and then maybe to eventually impress the said girl, he decides to unbuckle his seatbelt and stand up during the Matterhorn to kind of maybe pretend he was skiing, something along those lines, you know, just kind of look like, hey, look at me, woo, doing my thing, surfing, whatever, going down the bobsled. But as you know, those are tight passages, you know, things are flying around as you're going down the Matterhorn. So he's standing up and he goes into one of the caves and hits his head. And you're going maybe 20 something miles an hour at that point, smacks his head, flies out of the vehicle. Rescue crews finally find him later on, you know, hours later in the bushes and trees down below, you know, fractured skull, the whole thing, and eventually died a few days later. But there's a reason why they say keep your hands and arms and your seatbelt or your restraint on, because you stand up, things can happen, you know.
Yeah, of course.
The saying back in the day was that you check your brain in at the gate, you know, you kind of lose, you think you're in this safe environment, which is very safe, but you're also around machines. Like, these are machines. These are machines that are very dangerous. They're made safe for you to get on and off, but outside of the safe zones, if you will, which would be where you're sitting and within a cone of safety, you know, you could reach your arm out, nothing's going to happen. But if you're standing up, well, then you're going to hit your head and you're going to get thrown out of there. So that's a scary one. You know, I think it's a cautionary tale that you know, you got to look out for yourself. You know, things can always happen. Not everyone's always going to look out for you, so you got to have some responsibility and keep those seatbelts on.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is, like, I always think whenever I go somewhere that's not Disneyland and, you know, like a national park or, you know, whatever, river rafting, I don't river raft, but if, you know, you do something like that and you're like, well, this isn't Disneyland, okay, so you can't get hurt. It's not really like a fair, you know, a fair analogy for a situation, because you very well can get hurt at Disneyland, and they have all kinds of things up to hopefully prevent that and people to tell you what to do. And, you know, they would like to think that you would have a little common sense. But, you know, hey, sometimes people's excitement or their anxiety or whatever it is gets the best of them. And, you know, their heads are just popping off.
They are popping off. You got to be careful, you know. Disney can always go so far to protect people. People have to take some responsibility.
If now, you're going to go over a barricade. Now, what happens lawsuit-wise in this case? Is Disney liable, or did they, you know, they use their crack team and get out of that one? What did they do?
That one I don't know, but I would assume that maybe there was a payout, maybe there wasn't. It was in the 60s, so I don't know. It's a little different than today. So yeah, I don't know. But that person clearly was in the fault. If the rest of the people were saying that, yeah, he was standing up in the vehicle, which is against what the safety instructions say, is don't stand up, don't unbuckle your seatbelt. So clearly he was in the wrong in that case.
Now, he didn't die in the park. Didn't he die? He died a few days later, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that was that's tough. You know, it's I didn't mean to, you know, I joke, but you know, sometimes you just kind of have to. This is a 14-15 year old kid. That was a sad deal. That's too bad.
Yeah,
a lot of you know, Disneyland has had a number of these kinds of things, and you know, even the ones, you know, where it was something like on the part of a guest doing something like that, you know, mm-hmm. they're told not to, common sense would tell them not to, everything's telling them not to, and they do it. It doesn't mean that it's not a tragedy in a sense.
Yeah,
it's not,
no, of course really that's a tragedy, but it just kind of, like I said, a cautionary tale for people out there. Because you see a lot of people, you know, being casual and stuff with some of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you got to have
and
fun.
You know, there's a lot of stuff, too, you know, and you know, we all get frustrated sometimes when we see certain rules that are going to impede on our freedoms and little things we want to do. I know that, and I don't know about Disneyland, and correct me if I'm, are selfie sticks still allowed at the park? Maybe they're not allowed on rides anymore?
They're not allowed in the park at all.
At all, period, okay.
At all, yeah. Go. People were sticking those things out, they broke some props, things like that.
Yeah, they get caught on stuff. And I mean, I've used it there. I've used one. I used a GoPro one, and I've used, like, you know, just a Hoopty, you know, the $15, $20 one. Yeah, you can get some good shots with those things for sure. Get some vantage points that are, you know, not the typical, but, they are dangerous. I mean, I've seen some footage of people's arms getting torn off. This is not at Disneyland, you know, these are at, you know, kind of the lesser of the establishments, but there's, yeah, these things can cause some bad stuff. And so you just really need to be careful. And, you know, we were talking about other podcast ideas, fans at home, talking about some other ideas as, you know, the podcast progresses and some show topics. And I was looking at some disasters, not that have happened at Disneyland, but at some other parks, just to see, you know, just exactly how good Disney is in terms of keeping these things from happening. When you look at some of these other parks that have been in existence for a fraction of the time Disneyland has, and have seen far less visitors, and have had far more incidents. You look at them, and there's been some gruesome things that have happened. I don't want to get into it right now. We'll save that for another podcast. But a lot of scalping, believe it or not. I'm not going to say anything more about that. It's awful. But yeah, you got to be careful. You got to be careful. Some of these rides, they're not messing around.
No, they're machinery. You would think of these things as things that are in factories, you know, big machines moving around and stuff.
Yeah, look at it that way. That's a better way to do it. You get steel toe boots, you start showing up in the park, people have a hard hat on, and maybe that's fine. Maybe that's what they need to do. I don't
know. That's the future, you know. They
a
keep
lot of negligence.
Bringing
a lot
up of the negligence. The height of rails and stuff like that eventually, you know. Personal safety equipment will be next on that list. So fun fact, just a quick one in here. The only Mr. when it came to, you know, saying Mr. something within the company was Mr. Toad. Well, although he's told people, don't call me Mr. There's only one Mr. in the company, mm-hmm. and that's Mr. Toad.
You know, there were a couple other Misters. I'm not refuting this. And I know that was Walt saying. I didn't even know you were going to bring that up. How do you like that?
Wild card.
But there's also Mr. Lincoln. There's Mr. Smee. And there's Mr. Morrow, Mr. Tom Morrow from Mission to Mars and Flight to the Moon.
You're right about Lincoln. But, you know, of course, Walt could have said that before Lincoln opened. And Tom Morrow came in 1998 or so.
Flight to the Moon was before 98.
That's an old one. Tom Morrow was originated. That's right. He originated the Mission to Mars. Not the interventions in
Yeah, he came back in interventions. Right. We saw that was kind of his reanimation. He had been around long before, because you remember, like, I can't remember what it was during. It was, you know, there used to be some sites where you could listen to these ride spiels, like right off of DAX. I mean, not like recorded with somebody's phone and great quality and all this stuff, but like the actual DAX recording. And it would always go, paging Mr. Morrow, Mr. Tom Morrow. Like, what ride was that? I can't remember what ride that was for, but they would always do this. And every time I hear that in my head, if somebody says tomorrow, like legitimately somebody says tomorrow, I think of that. But yes, there are a couple other Misters. It's not like people are saying Mr. Smee all the time, but Hook does, he does give him the Mr. title when he says his name.
That's true. That is true.
Maybe half the time.
Hmm.
And what was the deal with that? Walt just, he only wanted first names to be used on the name tags and stuff like that?
Yeah, there was this whole thing. Like, you know, first name, you know, have the name tags. It was just to be more like personable, more friendly.
Yeah, I can get that.
Everything with Disneyland in the early days was to avoid any carnival pier connotations. Like everything was generated to make it be the opposite of that. So one entrance into the park, no alcohol. Friendly cast members, things like that, that they were trying so hard.
Now, we've seen some of these things fall off a little bit.
It's very true. That's very true. But yeah, that there was so much of the park was designed to avoid anything along those lines.
That makes sense. That's good. Yeah, you know, that's good fact. Good fact on that one.
Brick wall.
I'm going to do a couple more.
Okay.
The brick wall. I got a couple for you. Here's one that I thought maybe people think this is interesting. The swans by the castle. You know these swans? They're in the kind of the moat around the castle. You've seen them in there before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Disney, I think they rent those swans. I don't know if they even have a lease with an option to buy. I think they just rent them. There's always one male and one female, you know, they don't, you know, they don't live forever. So they're always renting them. They're renting these swans all the time. And they, you see these juniper bushes over there and you would think, hey, you know, you've got this beautiful castle, and you've got this little Snow White thing with the well over on the side, and then you have that like Neptune, or not Neptune, but that King Triton thing with the water shooting everywhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, you have all this great stuff. And but why would they choose junipers of all things to be kind of in that area? Do you know why that is?
No, I'm actually curious to know.
Swans don't eat them. Swans don't like junipers.
Ah, okay.
I'm not going to say that maybe they get a bad stomach ache or something if they did, probably because it's never, you know, it's never even been introduced because they're repulsed by the idea. Mm-hmm. But they don't like it. And it's like the one plant that they won't eat. So they say, hey, you know, we'll border them with this. And essentially it kind of acts as a little bit of a invisible fence and just kind of keeps them in there because they're like, well, I mean, we're not going near those bushes. So I guess we'll just stay in here until the rental period's over.
Okay, I like that. So they're rented, and the junipers are what keeps them from, you know, just wandering into the park. They really don't like junipers. I don't like junipers either.
Wandering into the park, wandering out of the park, and it just, yeah, it's like it's like those things, you know, dogs and the invisible fence. They give them a little zap when they get outside of the front yard. It's like that for swans. You wouldn't think that there was something like that for swans, but I guess they just found out, hey, turns out they don't like these, so let's do that. And I had no idea that they rented them. I mean, I don't know, like, is there a career and there's like a retirement phase and they, you know, they go off to college, what do they do afterwards? But yeah, the swans come in, there's always a male, there's always a female. So people can differentiate and have a good time with that. I don't know how they determine that. And, you know, with genders, you know, it's better. You just, you know, you don't ask or anything, but it's pretty cool. I just found that out. They don't eat the bushes. So they stay away from the bushes. It kind of keeps them in. And then everybody has these wonderful swans to look at.
I like it. I like it. Plus, I don't like junipers either. I agree with the swans.
The thing about junipers is you like, you know, you're a kid and you're like playing hockey, street, you know, street hockey or whatever.
No, you're
hockey
going where I think you're going.
You're using a tennis ball, you know, you're slapping, or even like, you know, those little the plastic street hockey balls. They always will go in somebody's juniper bushes. Those bushes are always sharp. On the outside, they're a little bit sharp. You put your paw in there, and as the branches die on the inside, they're like, they're always, it's not thorny per se, but they're like, they get dried out and they're always poking you.
Yep.
There's bugs in there. There's like
itchy.
Spiders like to hang out in there. They're very, very itchy. Dogs are always peeing on them for some reason. I don't know why. But I think it's because little animals use them as refuge. And so it's just junipers, and they're kind of, you know, they can be those graveyard trees too. I am not a juniper guy. I don't like them. Never liked them. They're swallowing people's tennis balls right and left. And they just, and you know, you get in there and you look around for minutes, it seems, hours, it seems. And where did the ball go? There were many times that a tennis ball or something like this would go into, I'm not talking about like a massive juniper bush that's like the size of the briar patch on Splash Mountain. We're talking about little bushes about the size of like a medium size Rubbermaid tub. Okay, that's how big it is. You're fishing around in that thing for however long. You got your hockey stick, you're kind of poking in there, and then you actually get in, you lift up the branches, and you never find the stuff. Where does it always go? Junipers are like, I'd rather not know. I don't know what the deal is with it.
I used to get thrown into these bushes and have to work my way out. So I was never a fan.
How did you?
A lot of horseplay. Not going to cast any names.
Yeah, it's tough growing up sometimes, you know, it's good. You learn a lot of lessons about bushes and stuff, but different ones, different ages. But the thing, the bushes keep them, the junipers keep them away. They stay in, stay out, stay in, stay out, however, whatever they're doing. And we have, got these swans to look at. Pretty cool, huh?
I like it. I like it. What's next on the list? Bricks? And
okay.
Walls.
I got another small one. And then we'll get to what you've come here to see. So this one I thought was interesting, and I feel like I want to challenge it, but I'll let you decide. You tell me. So time is a bit of an issue at Disneyland, Disney parks, maybe all the parks. And kind of in the same way that it would be in a casino. You're in a casino, you never see any clocks. Things that are hard to find in a casino: clocks, windows or exits or doors or anything like that, and people's dignity. But the park is a little different in that it's hard to know about the wait times for attractions. And the reason for that is, this is a speculation that has been proven in a number of, I'm using air quotes right now, but some field tests done by guests. And I don't know that anything has been done officially, but essentially what they're saying is, the time that you see posted on both the sign immediately as you're getting into the attraction, as well as on the big board over on Main Street. And if you guys haven't been to the park, but there's a big white board over there, and it's got all the attractions that would matter, and shows, you know, approximately what the wait time is. And you know, basically what they do is to determine this is what they say. And I've been handed the little pass, but you get in line, cast member will give you a little lanyard to put around your neck. It's got a little red card on the end of it. And, they time the second they hand that to you. And then as soon as you bring it up to, the cast member at the very end of the line, as you're about to get into the ride vehicle or take a picture with a princess or a snowman or a dwarf or whatever it happens to be. Then you'll hand it to them and there'll be a little process of information and they'll say, hey, this guy was in line 45 minutes. Now, what's going to go on that board out there? Is it going to be 45? Is it going to be 50? Is it going to be 55? Could it be an hour? We don't know. That's for them. That's something that they do. But what people are saying is, again, you know, they're saying that they're overshooting on the time, not undershooting, but they're overshooting. So let's say you get through that line, get through that queue and you get all the way up to the front, get up to the stanchions, it takes 45 minutes. They might put 50, 55, maybe even an hour on there for two reasons. What do you think that you want to take any guesses about what those two reasons are? Any thoughts?
No, I want to know. I want to know.
Okay. Okay. The first one is, now this is going to be more common with a fast pass enabled attraction, but because they want to encourage you to use a fast pass, if you see that longer time on there, they want you to go and they want you to get a fast pass. Why do they want to do that? Well, a couple of reasons for that. They want you, and some of these, I'm coming up with some of these. Some of them are what people are saying. Other ones, I'm kind of adding to it. But they think maybe you'll get the fast pass, and then you'll shop or you'll eat or something while you're waiting for that fast pass to come up because you're thinking, I can't get all the way over to that other row. So let's go in the Star Trader. Let's find something to do in here. We'll grab something. So it gives you more chances to do that stuff or maybe some of the more low key attractions. So It works out in Disney's favor no matter what. The other thing is Disney will be able to obtain some more behavioral data on look for fast passes. In order to get a fast pass, folks, you know, you got to put your park ticket in there, whether it's your annual pass or it's your regular park ticket. You still have to put it in the machine to get that fast pass. And now they can kind of see what you're up to. And now while, this is a lot of what this is kind of like the cookies on your web browser. It's just checking to see what you do while you're there. And that's invaluable for Disney. You know, behavioral patterns, it really helps design kind of the best guest experience, plus get Disney the most dollars, most revenue. So that's a little something I've added to that, kind of my theory, but that's based in, I think, enough fact. And the second reason that they would post these longer times is when you inevitably do get up there and you go on the ride and you come out and you say, hey, we waited in the line and we went on the ride and it was still a couple minutes less than what it had said would be the wait time. Now you're in a good mood, feeling positive, walking off to the next attraction, and you've got a very good taste in your mouth of the park. So those are the two reasons that I've kind of been able to find, in terms of why those times might be off a little bit.
So they are off a little bit because I've gotten the thing where you put the little thing on it and it's,
sure.
And you go through, then you hand it to the cast member on the way out. Huh?
Kind of feel special. You know, people that don't know, they're like, hey, what's he doing wearing that? Why them? Who is this guy? But maybe he's on some kind of work release program, but that people don't really know what that is. Some of them maybe, but yeah. Have you ever noticed that the time's being off and have you noticed them being, the line ended up being shorter, or maybe the line ended up being way longer? What do you think?
All the time. The lines are always longer and or shorter than the wait time for sure. Because you never know when the last time that was on or just the general flow of the park. Because, you know, certain times you might go to an area of the park where it is just packed. And you might go on to, you know, Frontierland or something like that, and it's just dead. Whereas Tomorrowland, it's just gridlock. It's kind of, I think people generally just kind of follow each other, and they eventually just follow each other in these giant packs that roam the park. That is a theory that I have. I don't have any evidence of it, but I do think that eventually people just kind of follow the crowd around, and this giant mob just kind of goes around the park. And there's stragglers, of course, everywhere, but usually this kind of gradual group that always flows around the park, and you know, one area is jammed and another area is not. You might see the submarines have an hour and a half line, and then you go over to Haunted Mansion and it's got like 15 minutes, and then later you go back, it's an hour. So
but do you think there's any, okay, and that makes sense, that makes perfect sense, but if you had to attribute a trend to it, so you say that you've experienced both, you know, the ride times being way shorter, way longer. Has any of those, I mean, would you say if you had to, like, you know, you had to process it all together, like, does it seem like it's more often it's dead on, more often the you ended up waiting longer than the time posted, or you waited less? What do you think on average?
I think it's always the opposite. It's always like sometimes I think, oh, it's going to take a long time, and it wasn't really that long. Or it's like, oh, let's just jump on here real quick. Maybe that's a psychology thing where you're thinking like, oh, this is going to take longer. But then, oh, wait, it didn't take as long as I imagined in my mind, or as short as I imagined in my mind, which then I thought it took longer. So I don't know. That's a good question. But I would say that most of the time, it's a little bit longer.
Okay. Now, you're coming from a little bit different perspective in some ways, because, you know, being in a wheelchair, you sometimes you're waiting in the same lines and you're going through the same process as any other guest. Other times you're entering through the exit, or however you want to refer to that. So maybe these ride times are a little less relevant to you now, or with certain attractions. That could be the case. I don't know.
Brick wall.
All right. Well, time has come maybe for us to, you know, talk a little bit about this here. There is a wall. There is a brick wall. It's at the park. I don't know that many people know about this. It is over by the lockers. This is at Disneyland Resort, of course, Magic Kingdom. It's over by the lockers. And when you see it, you'll know. Because there's about three, maybe even four different types of bricks used. It's just a red brick wall. So we're not talking about a bunch of different colors and all that kind of zany stuff. It's just different sizes, slightly different shades. And, you know, maybe the mortar might be a little bit different. But yeah, so you'll see this wall. And what it was known as, and that wall has actually been there since opening day. Now, I don't know if this is not there anymore. I was doing some research, and I was trying my best to try to find some photos, like almost like, I wish they had like a webcam, like a drone that was always flying over that maybe you could just check. I mean, it's late now. I wouldn't be able to see it. But I wanted to see like an up-to-the-minute shot of that area. But anyway, if it's not there now, it used to be. There was a brick wall that was back there right by, it was back by the lockers on Main Street. And it was kind of by that cone shop. And it was a brick wall. And what they referred to it as was the test wall. And now that wall was there on opening day. And what they had done was they had tried different brick orientations. And the one that they eventually decided on after having that wall on Main Street, so they could kind of see what it would look like with everything else, that was how they decided eventually on the brick that they wanted to use dominantly throughout that area. And so that wall stayed. It was something that they wanted to keep in there. And eventually, and I don't know somebody within the company installed a drinking fountain right in the middle of it. So they made it somewhat functional. So they put the drinking fountain in there, kind of embedded it into the wall, and kind of a neat little deal. It was one of the few things that remains there untouched since opening day. And yeah, a lot of things are there since opening day, but they've been repainted or rethemed or reimagined or re-something. This has only had a drinking fountain added into the middle of it. The bricks have not been touched. I don't even know if it's been repainted. I hope not. And I hope it's still there. I know they were going to do this kind of like back alley project. And if they did do that project, then it's possible that it's gone. But I want to say it might still be there. I just cannot recall the last time I was there. And I was back in that area by the lockers. I cannot recall if I saw that brick wall or not, because you wouldn't even think about it. There's a brick wall, a drinking fountain in there. That's the test wall.
Oh, I like that. So it's the test wall. You know, that could be put into some kind of like secret story, right? That's like a portal. You know, if you were
you
making
can imagine,
some kind
you know,
of Kingdom's Keepers like
fiction
style.
Exactly.
Thing.
Exactly.
Kingdom I like
Keepers.
That.
Those are good books. You could do something like that. So when you said Diagonale, I was like, oh, this guy knows. He already knows. He's gonna blow up my spot when I get through the thing. But yeah, I thought that was you know, you look at these lists and you see all these stories and you watch these YouTube videos of all these little known facts. There's so many great ones out there. Some great videos. Some people have some good voices. They get in there and they kind of be scary with it and stuff. It's always a shocking thumbnail, and there's a lot of stuff I recommend you just don't click on because most of it's bogus. But every once in a while, I come across like a little thing like that. And when I saw that brick wall one on there, I was like, if I don't say this one, you know, I'm kicked off the podcast. I got to share this.
Oh, I like that. That was a good one. It reminds me of a story like in that area. where they sold production cells back in the day for like $5. They were in a cardboard box. There was a stand, you know, it's called the Art Corner. People came over there. They could, you know, rifle through them, pull out what they want. And these cells could be today valued at $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. Depending on, you know, the quality, the character, if it had a background, things like that.
Oh, mama. So what are the ones that are worth a lot? So people can check, you know, maybe somebody bought this, their grandparents bought it. Don't put it out at the swap meet. Check it out. What are some that are worth a lot of money?
Any of them. Anything that was a production cell. So that's something on like acetate paper, you know, like they get that on there. It's, you know, inked, it's penned, you know, it's the character doing something from the scene. Because this is a still, this is like a frame of the movie because, of course, it was hand-drawn. Yeah. And if it's something, oh my gosh, if you found something that was Peter Pan, Maleficent, I mean, Maleficent is one of the most valuable characters. Maybe the hag might be a little bit more just because of the originality of the original animated movie. Pinocchio, I couldn't, the backgrounds for Pinocchio must be a fortune. I've heard that some of, especially Lion King, could be very, very valuable. But yeah, some of those production cells, I mean, our family has a few of them, but I couldn't imagine seeing some of the ones of like Maleficent and some of these things. You used to be able to see these in the Disneyana shop in its original location in Main Street, you know, further up the road, whereas now it's in the Disney Gallery, the whole thing there. But you used to be able to see them, but nowadays these things are becoming even more rare, so you're...
You know,
very unlikely to see them within the park anymore. Maybe some reproduction pieces, but rarely ever will you see an actual production cell in the park, unfortunately, these days.
You want to see them? You go to D23. You go to the big fan event, the big DisneyCon thing. I went there last year and I saw all kinds of these things. They had a cool little setup where they actually used on the backdrop. So if you guys imagine like a trade show where you always have all these big, you know, little booths, these little fold out things, they were using carpet from the old, you know, Great Moments. So they took that red carpet out of Great Moments and replaced it. They used that as the backdrop. And then they had cut out little sections. And that's where they put these framed cells in there. And it was pretty impressive. I took a lot of photos, you know, and, you know, they don't come out good, but you're just kind of taking them to share with. Actually, I took them to show some pictures of you. But it was pretty cool to be able to see that. I thought that was a kind of a special opportunity to look at some of those. Because normally they're in the gallery or they're there's so many auctioneers that hold a lot of Disney stuff, and they maybe it's like consignment or something, or they're like holding it for someone else, you know, because they're a little bit better at that and can attract a bigger audience. There's first of all, D23 was amazing. It blew my mind. I didn't even know I was going to be there. I was really happy, kind of didn't think I'd be able to make it, and last minute roll in there, and it was a scramble because I didn't have a lot of time. I had a 3-day pass. I only got to go in for a few hours. But it was cool to look at all that stuff. They had a great poster from the Hollywood Tower Hotel. Best one I'd ever seen. If I was a little more liquid at the time, it was like $3,500 for this poster. I just couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't do it. But it was an original. It was not a print. It was the real deal. And man, if I can't even describe it. It's just like get the goosebumps. But anyway, the cells are cool. And I did not know that. I didn't know that they were selling them that way. I didn't know there was a little stand, a little lemonade stand with some cells and you know, a cup for your troubles. I had no idea there was anything like that.
Yeah, very, very early on, first years of it. So yeah, that I couldn't even imagine being able to achieve like to buy a cell that is worth so much. But yeah, that's what's funny about art. You know, it's pretty much what the value you give it, and they gave it none at that time, and now we give it a ton of value. That's the interesting thing.
Anything is that way, though. You really think about it, you know. I mean, that's why the park tickets are what they are, what the annual pass is, what it is. You know, like it's just value is simply what somebody's going to pay for it. Somebody's like, hey, that's not worth it. Don't buy that hat. It's not worth it. Well, maybe not to you, to a whole bunch of other people it is. So you know, keep on walking, buddy.
So I think that was pretty fun, kind of going back on memory lane with Nixon and the death, the brick wall, the swans and the junipers. I like all these facts. The cats,
like all kinds of Bob Gurr. You know, the fact that we're any conversation that we can bring somebody like that in. Bob Gurr is like Bob. You know, like think about like Wayne Gretzky as he is to hockey, and then think of like Bob Gurr. That is
who?
Bob Gurr is like the Wayne Gretzky of, you know, of Imagineers and of developers and you know, all that kind of stuff. Wayne Gretzky,
he is.
You said who? He's a hockey player. You know, he played. He played for the Kings, but you probably saw him in Mighty Ducks. He had a cameo in the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, okay. Huh,
the first one, the first movie. Okay, there are a few of them. There's three of them, maybe. But you saw him in the first one. Emilio Estevez. There were some other people in it. Classic. Good, great movie.
Okay. All right. So that was awesome. I feel like this podcast can have multiple parts in the future for our Disney stories and trivia type of thing. I think we could do more of these in the future. We've got a ton of plans for future episodes of the podcast. Also, standalone videos will eventually come to the channel, which we're very excited to bring you guys. So make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel. We'll continue, of course, you know, having this out on all the different forms that you listen to podcasts on. But we're really excited about the YouTube channel, of course, adding potential standalone videos and things
and
like that.
And the format
to
will
it.
Be different, right? You know, we'll do some, we'll take little bits and pieces from some of these podcasts, you know, and these videos will probably just be a couple of minutes. Some of them a few minutes, a couple of minutes, you know, and it'll either highlight a small thing that we mentioned, or it will lend visuals to something that we chatted about, or maybe it'll even be something special that wasn't even mentioned.
Yeah. So we're very excited about that. Make sure you guys are following us on all the different things that you enjoy, like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, for all the updates on the Backlot Boys. And we will be back with you guys again with episode 5. I got an idea potentially for it, but we'll see what we do. So,
hey, and let us know what you guys want to hear, right? You know, Scar's got all kinds of great ideas. He's got a whole list of them. We put them in a Google Doc, you guys. But if there's something you want us to address, you want something you want us to talk about, you know, please bring that stuff up, because I mean, this is the time to do it. Actually, you know what? I think there was a comment. Somebody had commented on one of the YouTube videos. So we actually have a user question. Can I bring that in here real quick?
Let's save it for our next episode. We'll start out with it. We're running a little bit long today.
Oh.
But yeah, we will get to that. So definitely leave user questions in the YouTube comments or hit us on Twitter for that. But yeah, we like to keep the podcast not super, super long. So we'll get to that in the next episode. And guys, as always, thank you so much for following along with us as we create this podcast. We're having so much fun. We're sitting here having calls, writing down ideas, having a ton of fun making this. So if you guys are enjoying this, definitely give us a review on iTunes. Hit a like on YouTube. And guys, thank you so much as always. And we'll see you in the next podcast. Goodbye.
See ya.